Hey Rachel, what you up to today?
Oh, hey, Jamie. It's laundry day here, so I'm doing everybody's laundry, the kids, the husbands, the neighbors, and I'm doing it all with Clorox regular bleach with Cloramax.
Oh, cool. So what are you doing after that?
Oh, after this, I gotta head up to the kitchen and wipe down the counters. The kids had macaroni and cheese for lunch, and some of it got in their mouths, but most of it's gotta be wiped down with Clorox regular bleach with Cloramax.
Okay, so what are you doing later?
Later? Oh, it's gonna be fun. I have my dad's car for the weekend, and one of the kids had an accident in it this morning, so I gotta wipe down the back seat with Clorox regular bleach with Cloramax.
Wow. Well, next you're gonna tell me that you disinfect your dog with Clorox.
Wait, he told you that? And actually, he loves it.
Wait, you seriously do that?
Yeah, Apollo loves it. Oh, here he comes. He's bringing me the bottle in his mouth. Come here, Apollo.
I guess it is true. When it counts, trust Clorox.
What's up, Peluelitos? We have a new segment brought to you by Half Brothers, an upcoming comedy from Focus Feature. This film is about two long-lost family members who finally meet. And today, I'm meeting with a family member I haven't talked to in a while, my Uncle Pepito.
¿Qué pasa, Franklin?
Tio Pepito is without a doubt my favorite family member, and I can't wait to see this new movie, Half Brothers, with you, Tio.
Frank, I have something to tell you.
What is it, Tio?
I'm not really your uncle.
What do you mean?
I mean, we're not related.
But I've been calling you Uncle Pepito my whole life.
Everybody in the neighborhood calls me Uncle Pepito. It's a nickname. My real name isn't even Pepito, it's Joshua.
Well, you always called my father hermano.
I called everybody hermano or bro to my non-Latino friends.
But you were always at my family functions.
That's because I had a huge crush on your mother. Man, back in the day, she was caliente. Hermano, your father didn't even deserve her.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. I feel like I've been living a lie, kind of like the main character Renato in Half Brothers when he discovers he has an American half brother he never knew.
Hey, just because we are not blood related doesn't mean we are not family. Forget nephew. I considered you more like a son.
That means a lot, Theo. I mean, Joshua.
Forget that Joshua crap. I will always be Tio Pepito to you.
Okay, Tio Pepito.
That's better. By the way, how's your mom looking these days?
All right, interview's over. Since we're not family members anymore, I don't feel bad kicking you out. And LOLeros, check out the hilarious and heartfelt new movie, Half Brothers, in theaters December 4th. Get your tickets at halfbrotherstickets.com.
It's the Latinos Out Loud podcast.
All right. Hey guys, it is now time in the show where we interview someone freaking amazing. Okay, get ready. Buckle your seatbelts. This is going to be a good one. We support this man. He is a director and producer, and his name is Jesse Terrero, people.
Woo.
Come on, people.
And up, people.
Dominican Republic, what's up? What's up? Orgullo.
Oh,
Fuck. Shit, the
yeah.
flag's out. I don't know if you can see it
I
over
see
my left shoulder.
that.
Cinema Giants is in the motherfucking building. Stop
Yeah.
cursing. Stop
We'll
cursing.
bleep it out. We'll bleep that out.
The
The curses.
network told me, the network
Yeah.
specifically said to stop the F word. You could use the other ones.
Our demographic is a little younger. So
Jesse,
it's better.
welcome. It's good to have you on the show, man.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Where are you, if you don't mind telling us and all of our listeners?
All
Where are you
right, now I'm in
located?
New York.
Oh,
Oh,
word.
all right.
New York. I just got in yesterday from Santo Domingo. I was in Las Terrenas, and then I went and picked up my daughters, and we flew in last night for Thanksgiving.
That's what's up. Maybe you was on Frank's mom's flight because she just came back with two maletas of limoncillos last night.
Maybe.
Did the flight smell like avocado and hair conditioner? Because that's what she brought back. Well, that's good. You're a very well-traveled man. I mean, you know, the reason why we wanted you on this show is because we know you have stories and experience and passion, especially in what you do. And it's going to be hard to get all that in 30 minutes because I'm sure you have a lot to talk about. But my first question is, how did you get your start in film production and directing? What made you head in that direction?
I mean, you know, for me, it wasn't so simple in terms of like drawn out, like, oh, I want to be a director. That was never really part of my mind growing up. But, we grew up in a bad neighborhood. We grew up in the Bronx, two blocks away from Yankee Stadium. Mm. And my father, he was a super of the building. He ended up buying a house in Jamaica, Queens. And, you know, the neighborhood he bought the house in was, you know, it was extremely bad. It was like a very high drug zone, you know, a lot of violence, you know, prostitution, things like that. And my father went to work at night. My mother worked 9 to 5. So when she was on the way home, she would get home about 6. He would have to leave around 4 to get, you know, to get to work on time. So they would cross each other. Right. So for that gap of time, sometimes there wasn't somebody in the house, you know, when we were like in our early teens. So my mother said, you know, she didn't want us out in the streets. So she gave us a camera and she was like, you know what? Just, I don't care what you do, entertain yourselves. And at that time, you know, there was a channel called Video Music Box.
Of course.
Yeah, Ralph McDaniel.
So, Uncle Ralph.
So we used to watch the box all the time. So at some point we started trying to mimic the videos. That's how it all started. We started mimicking the videos and then me and my brother were EPMD or somebody was LL Cool J. We would do our own renditions of the videos that were out. And then my father worked maintenance at CBS. And sometimes he would come home with things that they would throw away. And sometimes it would be like albums. There'll be like soundtracks. So then all of a sudden we had like soundtracks and we started making like our own versions of movies, you know, and we had the music and the score, you know? So we started, you know, playing around like that. And at some point, you know, you start finding the love for things and you don't know that that's what you want to do, but you start kind of finding the love. And Ralph McDaniels had a call out for casting. And we were watching Video Music Box one day and they were like, oh, they wanted Latinos and African-Americans and stuff to come out. So we were like, you know, let's go out because we thought there were going to be a lot of girls there and we thought it could be cool.
Opportunities, let's go.
Yeah, but you know what? I was sitting there and they kind of took everybody and it was like a cattle call. They took like 100 people in at a time and they gave a speech, took everybody's information, was like, thank you. But at the moment, the woman was kind of saying, thank you. You know, something struck inside me to say, you know what? Like I wanted more information. Like I didn't want to just get thrown out in the cattle call. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, this part of the story, people shouldn't lie, but I lied. And I told the production people that I think I lost my keys. So when I went back inside the room, there was nobody in there. We're waiting for the next group. So I approached the casting person and I had a conversation with them and I told them that I was really passionate about finding out more. And there weren't a lot of Latinos that showed up. Right. So they were looking for a lot, but a lot of people didn't come. Right. So, and most of the crew came from like Spike Lee's world. So they, you know, they were like sort of people that were an assistant or a second on Spike's, but now they were like in first positions. Right. Mm. So the movie was Juice. Right. And Juice was directed by Spike's cinematographer. Right. So it was kind of like that camp. So they already had their hand in the African-American market, but they didn't have like a big influx of Latinos. So the woman was like, no, she told me, I like your look or whatever. I would love for you to come back. So she had me come back. And my brother Ulysses at the time, he didn't go. He was like, yo, you're going back. So he came with me. So then he had like a pimple on his nose. So he put like a Band-Aid across it. So when we went into the casting, because we kind of looked similar, the director was like, I like these guys. And the one with the Band-Aid, he looks mean, you know? So they made us part of the gang that had beef with Tupac in the movie, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Well, you know, there was a guy, Radames, that had beef with Tupac. So we were part of the crew, right? So then now we're working every day on this movie. Like, you know, we didn't know nothing about filmmaking, and we're getting, I think, $50 a day or $60 a day as non-union extras. But, you know, Pac wasn't a star yet, but he was somebody that had, he had like one song out with Digital Underground, and, you know, Tretch from Naughty by Nature was one of the extras in the gang with us. He didn't have any records at the time.
Wow.
You know, Samuel Jackson was the guy that worked the store and Juice. Like, you know, so it was all these people you were around, but everybody on set mostly was African-American or Latino, right? Mm-hmm. So now I see people that are like, look like me in the film business, which I didn't know that that really existed. And then I started saying, wow, you know, asking questions and asking around. And when I went back to college, that was my freshman year in college, I decided to shift my major and I started studying theater and taking film.
From what to what? Wait, what was your major?
Business. I was just studying business. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do.
As in mind your business, Rachel.
Exactly. Well, I want to know about the transition. I want to know about, like, from what to what.
I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And, you know, my father was like, you're going to study this or that. Or, you know, so I was sort of like, you know, taking classes and figuring out that I was going to study business. But I didn't know what I really wanted to do. And then I shifted my major, which didn't make most people happy. But,
What, how was it received?
You know what? It was... It's hard. It was hard, I think, because my, you know, my father comes from a place where all he knows is hard work, right? So all he knows is hard work. He came from the Dominican Republic. He didn't speak the language. There was no, like, dreaming something money was going to fall out of the sky. Like, you either work.
Busca un trabajo.
Exactly. he used to tell me all the time, tú un vago, tú no haces nada. Like, not my father, but I'm working with my mind. You're not really seeing it. I'm just not here. Not doing nothing, I'm thinking, you know, because I got to come up with a concept or an idea when I started doing videos.
My brain is sweating. You can't see it, but it's sweating.
I'm on the toilet thinking, all right?
Exactly. You know, it was a hard concept to grasp, you know, so when I couldn't really show him, like, oh, there's another director, or look at this guy that's Dominican, or look at these guys, you know, I didn't have examples to show, right? Mm. So it wasn't like he... All my father wanted was, like, you know, he came and father and mother, but they came, they were busting their ass, they were working hard to put us in school, to give us a better education, to give us a better life, for me not to throw it away on the dream, right? It's like, you know, it's the classic story. But, you know, when you believe in something and you see the potential behind it, you know, I kind of stuck with it. And, you know, little by little, you know, from bringing people coffee to sweeping the floor to having other opportunities to intern and work on set, or, you know, eventually things start to take shape, you know, but it's been a long journey. Mm.
I just really appreciate how much your family has influenced your career path here. You know, I'm just listening to those things desde chiquito, those things that, like, weren't really put in place on purpose, but that have really, you know, played a crucial part in, like, your passion and your desire. And then I gotta shout out your family real quick, because now it all makes sense. You guys are such a show business family, such a, like, you know, a family with entertainment and moving Latinos forward at the core. So shout out to Ulysses and shout out to Lexi. It's wonderful to see that POV for someone to be so grounded in their family. So then when did the pivot to, like, music happen? Mm. Or was there a pivot? Are you working in tandem doing the music videos and the other
because
stuff?
You know, there wasn't a music video business. Like, that business didn't necessarily exist, right? So you're talking about a high scale, right? You're talking about Michael Jackson, you're talking about videos like that. That's what, and big rock videos. Right, that's what you saw on MTV. Like, that's what you were given. So when I was working in the film business, like, Tupac wasn't a big star. When Juice came out a year and a half later, bam, Pac was on fire, you know? And then when the movie was coming out, Tretch dropped OPP, like, things started coming out. And hip hop at that time started becoming bigger, right? And being a hip hop music video director wasn't a thing, you know? So when that became a thing where Hype Williams, Paul Hunter, F. Gary Gray, like, directors of color started coming into the game. That's what created that opportunity. So, like, you know, and there were very limited opportunities on the film side. So when you look at what Spike Lee was doing, when you look at, there wasn't other people doing it. So it wasn't like there was a slew of African-American directors either. So it was a struggle. But when music videos started to happen, you know, I was working production on films, and then, you know, Tretch was like, come by my video set. And sometimes we worked on his jobs, or we worked on other jobs, being production assistants or whatever, working my way up, second AD and doing different things. But it wasn't until Hype and those guys started to come where you started to see guys that looked like you directing. And you're like, oh, wow, you know, this music video thing could be a path. And the Puff Daddies of the world and the Jay-Z's of the world started saying, hey, I want a director that looks like me, right? So it wasn't until hip-hop guys came into power where they started making that demand and reaching back out to the community saying, yo, how come the directors don't look like us? Because that was not going to happen unless they made it happen. Mm-hmm. And then that created a path that eventually I saw music videos as a bridge to the film business. I knew that it was going to take me forever to go this way, but if I can attack music videos, then maybe I can find a beeline into the game.
Wow.
And then when music videos at that time were really blowing up, you know, I mean, they had, you know, was this around even the time of like TRL and where like you want to have that, people are actually watching videos on TV again? Yeah, it was kind of back. Are they spending like, are the budgets kind of insane at a certain point?
Yeah, I mean, at the time I was working, I mean, budgets were $3 million, $2 million, a million. I'm not saying I was getting those budgets. I'm saying what happens, we were working on those sets, and my brother was, you know, we had interned on a film project. I interned working in production. He interned working in casting. So he went down the casting path. I went down the more of the production path. And when we started working on music video sets, I would sometimes work with my brother because he would be doing casting. Sometimes I work on production. But I found out that some of the directors didn't write their own concepts. Like they have writers that came in and wrote the creatives. So I was working with a director and I overheard a conversation where, like, you know, Puff Daddy didn't like a treatment and he wasn't happy with some sort of concept. So I, you know, tried to give a suggestion like, hey, you know, I think I know what he's talking about. And then she was like, what the fuck do you know? What do you know about, you know, whatever. And I was like, look, I think I understand what he's trying to say, you know? So she goes, you know so much, why don't you write it? Right? So I was like, oh, I actually really like the song. So I have ideas that come to mind. So I wrote the treatment and she got the video. So then at that moment, she was like, wow, okay, maybe Jesse, you know, he might have his hand on something. So they started testing me out. So for the next like year, I was writing concepts. You know, that director was gigantic. So, you know, we're doing, you know, everything from Mariah to Wu-Tang to ODB to Method Man. I mean, we're just into everything, right? So I'm writing concepts. I was part of the writers on her team. So she had another writer in LA. I was writing. But I started, if she gave me like five songs and I wrote five ideas, then she might have booked four out of five of those jobs. Mm-hmm. But my, you know, I'm Dominican, so my batting ratio was strong, right? So I was like, so then I started becoming known as like an idea person. Like, oh, Jesse got good ideas. He got good ideas. So, you know, I was making like $500. So I was getting like $500 writing these concepts. And these videos are like $1 million. So the directors were probably walking away with 50 grand, 40. So back then, it's not like it is today, right? Where back then I felt like it was a longer path. So I felt like, you know what? I still got a lot to learn. I'm going to learn. I'm going to pay my dues. And now, you know, when it's my time, I'll be ready. You know, today, if somebody's like, off that first treatment, they would have been like Instagram, like, director, just made a movie. Just killed it. So for me, I got some of the reps in town found out that I was writing. So then they were like, oh, there's this director coming out of Baltimore, and he's like really hot, but, you know, he could be doing six videos a month, but he's only doing three because he can't write more in capacity. He's got too much going on. So we want to add you to, you know, he doesn't like to use a writer, but, you know, maybe you guys could vibe. So he never used to let me write alone. So we used to write together. So I would travel with him. We would sit in the hotel room and knock out a bunch of ideas. Then I would sit back and write while he shot the videos or whatever. And his career started to grow, you know? And then eventually he was the one that signed me. right? Because we also became creative friends and we built a really strong relationship. And, you know, so I got to learn. And when it was finally my time, you know, I was able to step in and, you know, do things the right way.
Jesse, you being Latino, Dominican, how did you mesh yourself in an African, predominantly an African-American industry, and how you made people believe in you?
You know, I think that growing up in New York, we live so close in terms of our cultures that I never really felt the separation of Latinos and Blacks, even though there would be wars in my neighborhood and the Spanish kids and the Black kids are going to war. But I never really felt that until I traveled outside of New York. So when I traveled outside of New York and went to the cities and especially LA, then I saw a big gap, you know, but you know, the other cultures in the Latino culture, you know, are more separate. You know, I can understand why the Mexicans are more separated than the African-American culture. Like as the Caribbean Latino is skews more Black.
Yeah.
Right. So the cultures are just closer. And in New York, it doesn't matter, white, Black, Asian, everybody got a similar swag. Like New York just gives you like a street swag. So even the white boy, you know, you buy into him on some hip hop shit because we're all in the same street in a way, yep. You know, like we all ride in that same subway car. So some of that rubs off on everybody. It don't matter what where you're from.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen everywhere else, you know. So I think New York wise, hip hop wise, you know, I grew up in the streets in New York. So, like, I don't think anybody ever doubted that I was hip-hop, you know?
Right.
I remember doing Soul Plane once that we had got some bad press where there were, like, some people upset about Soul Plane and me shooting stereotypes of African-Americans or whatever. So they were preparing us all for, like, press, you know? So they were putting, you know, they had to take me through this, like, anger management press thing, so I wouldn't say
no. Stop it. What? Stop it. Like, can you share some tips because we're still angry?
Yeah. Like, Jesse, how do you feel about setting the culture back? And then I would like, ah, and they'd be like, no, you gotta breathe, you can't answer, you can't, you know. So they'll coach me because some press might come at me hard.
Wow.
So somewhere in doing my like anger Latino or anger urban psychologist, you know, that they said something and I was like, yeah, you know, being Dominican, and I'm like, he's not African American.
Oh my God.
African American. So they made this whole big deal. And then the studio's calling me like, oh, we didn't know you were an African American. Like, we're so concerned about you doing the press.
Wow.
A Latino. We thought you were African American. I was like, yo, you guys should chill. Like, I don't think that's not going to come up. I'm like, yo, when they see me, I think they're going to buy what I did and who I am. I don't think anybody's questioning if I should have done this movie or not. But, you know, it's so funny how people perceive it, but
I can't even imagine what those phone calls must have been like at the studio. He said he's some kind of Dominican Republican. I don't even know what that country is. What is that? That is.
He's from DR. What is he, a doctor? I don't know what's going on.
I don't know what it means.
My favorite line from like one of the head guys at the studio was that anytime I second guessed him, because he would say, you know, some of this shit would be like, you know, this walks a fine line, Hollywood, boy. I will tell you that much. But he would say some stuff, and sometimes I wouldn't agree, because some of the suggestions would like rub me the wrong way, you know? So, and whenever I said anything, or I was like, yo, that doesn't work, or I didn't like it, he would hit me with this one. He would say, you know, I worked on Boys in the Hood. You know, I worked on Boys in the Hood.
And like, that was his card?
What the?
That was
Boys
his.
Boys in the Hood have to do with my movie. Like, now you're the king of Black movies? Like, come on. Man. Like,
wow.
Like, but I get it, you know.
I did craft service, right? On Boys in the Hood, right?
Exactly.
I kept everybody fed.
Yes.
Somebody told me that the other day too. You know, I went to school with Hype Williams. I'm like, dude, how many people went to school with Hype Williams? Like, you might not even be his boy. Like, I don't even know if he knows you. Like,
I was the cleaning lady. Like, I was the cleaning lady on Malcolm X, the film. So I cleaned up after craft services.
I got my SAG card on Malcolm X. Now that is true.
Nice.
I think the majority of Latino and Black actors in New York got their SAG cards on Malcolm X. Shout out to Winsome Sinclair for taking care of all of us.
Wow.
So, y ahora, now you're doing all this work for YouTube Originals. So, like, explain to us how that connection happened and the projects that have been released. Maluma, come on, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, you know, we, you know, the first, you know, I've been always trying to figure out a way to make content. And I'm just like, okay, I pivoted at one point, right? Because, you know, I was working in hip hop videos and I was seeing like what was happening in Latin music and wasn't so happy with the visual content and decided to really ingratiate myself in that world and try to make a change, right? And I started just working on Latin videos. And once I started doing that, I felt like at home in the sense of like, this is what I needed to be doing. Like, this is more my calling. Like, if you see what Scorsese did or this person or Spike did, you know, like, you know, it's right for me to be right here where I'm supposed to be, you know, like, and bring sort of my sensibility, because I live in all the worlds, the English world, the Spanish world, the hip hop world, bachata, salsa, and just blend that. Mm-hmm. And how do I bring that forward? So I was working and finding success in the Hispanic market or the Latin market or the Latinx. I don't even know what to call it anymore.
Word. But
whatever it was, you know, it's who I am. So fuck it. I got like, so many titles now.
We get it.
when I was working, you know, in that world and the music was getting so big, having come from Juice and working on movies like that and seeing Boys in the Hood and Menace Society and all these movies pop up that had like the feeling of hip hop, I was like, wow, reggaeton is so big, but there's nothing that goes against it. Like, you can't look in the mirror and see 8 Mile, Get Rich or Die Trying, Juice, like nothing, right? So I was like, there's a gap here. But as I was trying to sell these projects, I was always, you know, hitting like a wall, because they were like, oh, you know, this is too Puerto Rican or this is too Dominican. And if you don't open up the cast, it's like, you know, and I was like, yeah, but I'm just trying to be authentic to what's going on, right? So I'm being trying to be authentic to the culture. I'm trying to be authentic to the stories that I'm telling at the time, right? Because these specific stories needed that voice. And, you know, I struggled and I tried to set things up, and for years things fell apart until finally I did Nicky Jam El Ganador, right? So when you know, I was sitting with Nicky and we were having a conversation, shooting a music video, and he was telling me his story, I was so compelled by it that I told him, I said, look, you know, if you give me an opportunity to develop this, I think that I can do something with it. So we went into an agreement, and then I started putting something together, and he had a song that was like called El Ganador that sort of mimicked his life. So we shot something with that song, a music video that mimicked almost a trailer of what the show could be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took that out to NAFTY, and, you know, we pitched it, and, you know, Netflix bought it in the room, right? So Netflix was excited, and then, you know, Telemundo came on board, and you know, we kept pushing forward. During that time, I had already been working on Maluma, right? So Maluma was something that we started with our own money. It was an idea that I talked to Maluma about early on, wanting to do a documentary about an artist, but in real time. Like, Maluma was young and he was growing at the moment, right? So I was like, this is when you want to document it now, like when it's happening, you know, because he's part of a new generation that's coming out of social media and all these new streaming outlets, right? So so we were doing that in pieces, right? So Margie Moreno set up a general meeting with me at YouTube. So I went into YouTube, and one of the conversations was the Maluma project. They were like, what are you doing with the Maluma project? We would love to come in on it. And we're like, yeah, we're shooting it. We're still trying to, like, you know, we're moving it along, doing it our way, you know, but we'll let you know when we get closer and we want to have those conversations. So they started talking to me about Nicky Jam. So people knew that I was developing the thing with Nicky Jam. So they were like, what do you want to do next? So then I told YouTube, I said, look, as I'm developing Nicky Jam, as I'm doing more research in the world of reggaeton, and I've been around it so long, one has to ask a question, where are the females, right? If the genre is dominated by 70% a female audience, how come there's not another female star? Why did it go from queen and just nobody came after her?
That's it, the road stopped.
So there wasn't a support going the other way. That always bugged me a little bit, you know, especially being a father now of girls, so I'm thinking about that. So I was like, this is before Becky, Nati, you know, Carol, they all started taking off. So this is like they were still not getting that fair shot, right? So this was three and a half years ago. So I asked that I would love to develop something in this world, scripted, because maybe through content we can break a new talent or things like that. So they gave me a deal to develop a show around females in the world of reggaeton, and that's how Bravas happened. Wow. But we were so knee deep in Nicki Jam that I couldn't focus my energy on something else. So, and you know, Nicki Jam was a tough fighter. I had to make sure like all the writers were Boricua, and I brought them from Puerto Rico to work on Nicki, make sure the whole writing staff was, you know, knew the culture, was authentic. And there was a female writer in the staff. So then I took her, made her head writer on Bravas. So once we wrapped Nicki, we shifted our energy, you know, and then I took the writers from Nicki Jam and they all directed episodes of Bravas. So instead of like me sort of trying to do it all again, I wanted to sort of help open the doors for other directors and give them that opportunity. Because I used to always hear when I tried to do television, you don't have TV experience. I'm like, okay, but the white boy wasn't born with TV experience either. Somebody gives the experience. That's how this works.
Yeah.
But it's like, they always got some excuse. So I felt like, you know what? Whenever I get the opportunity that I can do something and give back, then I'm going to make sure that I help open those doors so that people are not running up into the same roadblocks that I did.
Oh.
That's incredible. Yo, before we wrap this up, Jamie, did you want to talk about Robert De Niro real quick? I don't want to, like, forget about.
I did. I wanted to know, well, obviously, you did it. You directed a film in 2012 called Freelancers, 50 Cent, Robert De Niro. And, I'm curious, directing an actor like Robert De Niro, how is he on set? Is he the type who's like, you know, hey, I'm gonna shoot it over here, so put the camera over here? Or
don't fucking direct me, all right?
You want to direct me, come over here and I'll go. Yeah. I'm not going over there. But or direct is he
nuts? How about you do that?
Was he you know, a team player?
No, what I would say is that he was definitely one of the nicest people that I've met in the business at that level, you know. Yeah. And when we were originally prepping the movie, it was going to be another big actor. Not as big as him, but another big actor. There were some complications. De Niro was somebody we went out to but was not available. So we were forced to go with somebody else. Things got complicated. The movie stalled a little bit and they pushed production. When they pushed production, they were like, the De Niro window's open again. Because now we pushed. So they're like, you know, De Niro does have a gap of time where he is available. But De Niro read the script, said he liked the script, but you know, he doesn't sign on to any movie unless he meets the director one-on-one. And if he likes the director, then he'll do it. So they were like, you gotta fly to New York, because we were in New Orleans, and close De Niro. So that's already pressure.
Like,
you gotta go to New York and close De Niro. But they're like, don't worry, he'll like you. De Niro's a guy's guy, he'll like you, whatever, whatever. So I get there and it's like, I wasn't sure. Like, I got to New York at like 10 in the morning. They were like, my meeting was going to be between 2 and like 7 p.m., right?
Wow, what a window.
Exactly.
That's worse than
all
you.
All that forget. Does is create like added stress. And I'm like, I'm dying. You know what I mean? I'm dying. So I'm like going shopping because I'm like, you know what? I don't know what to wear. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I try to come in a suit, he's going to be like, this dude don't wear a suit every day. So I was like, you know, but do I wear a blazer, maybe a t-shirt, some cool sneakers, so he knows I got some swag. He's from New York, so he's got to, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like trying to figure it out, not to be too corporate, but not to be too fucking, you know.
Like, cheese. So, you want to be cool and shit.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you finally get that call. Like, Bob's on his way to the office, so, you know, he's like, well, so I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I go to his office and, you know, I called somebody that knew him, you know, so they told me, hey, you know, he's super nice. You know, he's giving. Just don't go in there cocky, because that's a problem. Some people overbuild themselves, you know, because they're facing him. So they want to try to sell him that they're the best thing that ever lived. Mm. And like, you know, he's worked with the best directors, the best actors, the best writers. Like, just don't go in there with that bullshit. Like, you know, and be who you are, you know? And he'll accept you for whatever place in the world you're in. You know, he's not gonna judge you. So that was great, because I kind of went in there with that kind of like, you know what, I'm just gonna be me, you know? And it was an off day. So as I'm walking to his office, there were like two security guards. And I guess he wasn't, you know, nobody knew there was a meeting for him, you know? So like, they looked at me and I guess my outfit didn't sell them. So they were like, yo, what are you doing here? And I said, yeah, I got a meeting with Mr. De Niro. And they both looked at each other. They were like, yeah, right. And I was like, you know what? I get it. But you should call upstairs because his assistant's there. And I know he's on his way in. So, you know, because he wasn't there yet. So they were like, they called upstairs and he was like, all right, you could go up or whatever. It was tough, man, because like I was talking to him in my meeting, in the one-on-one meeting, and then like at some point I lost focus because I'm like, it's Robert De Niro. Like,
wow. And
I told him, I said, you know what, man? I gotta be honest with you. I'm extremely nervous. I was like, I'm extremely nervous. Like never in my life, and I thought I was gonna do great. I have like dreams of being great, but I didn't think I was gonna be sitting opposite you.
Yeah.
I just didn't, you know, like I didn't think so. I didn't think this meeting was gonna happen. So I'm not gonna lie, I'm crazy nervous, you know? And he was like, don't be nervous. Then he started breaking the ice. That's why I know he's a good guy, because he knew I was nervous. He goes, what are you, Dominican? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, he started talking to me about other stuff. And then we just got into the movie. And once we started talking about the movie, we were fine. And he was like, what work of yours should I watch? And he goes, yo, man, I like your vibe. I like the changes that you're thinking. And he goes, you know, I'm not going to string you along. I'll let you know in a couple of days. I'll go through the script tonight, blah, blah, blah. And a couple of days later, he signed on and came down, you know?
Wow.
And he was so nice to me, man. And I never forget that, you know, because he you know, he's a director too. That's what people don't understand.
Yeah.
So he's directed films as well, you know? So it's like the fact that he's a director, his approach is very different. He's a very studied actor too. But, you know, it was a lot of conversations, you know? Like I would be prepping in New Orleans and get a phone call and he'd be like, I had like the whole crew waiting, and he'd be like, hey, Jesse, it's Bob. You got a second? And my AD be like, wait. And I'm like, yes, I do, Bob. I remember he left me a message, and I saved it. I kept like saving, you know, when you could just see, save the message. I just kept saving it as long as I could, you know?
That shit for Christmas every year in front of the whole family.
Honestly, it was incredible, man. And it was tough because I would get nervous trying to give him direction.
Right.
You know, because I would want to say stuff, then I would get up my seat and sit back down like, nah, I'm, you know.
Yeah.
And then he saw me once. He was like, come over here. And he was like, what's up? What do you want to say? And I was like, yeah, well, you know, I didn't want to, you know, if I was you, I would maybe try this. And he was like, I like that. I'll try that. I'll give that a shot. You know? He's a legend. That's all I can say, man. But he showed me the utmost love, made me feel comfortable, and I'll never forget that experience, man. I'll take that to the grave.
So he really is a good fella, huh? That's great.
You wrapped it up in a nice bow.
Segway queen. Don't with me. Okay, I have one final question as we wrap this interview. And my, what a great story. Oh my goodness. You know, there's a lot of aspiring directors and producers, some of whom don't even know what their destiny is yet with their college degree or their education or their passion. So I just want to know, now being where you are in your career, what advice can you give to that cluster of people whom I hope are listening to our podcast right now?
I would say, look, if they, whatever career they pick, they have to be passionate about what they're doing, because there is no easy way to anything, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you want to be an athlete, if you want to be a singer, you want to be a doctor, you want to be a director, you want to be whatever you want to be, there is no easy path, right? So the only thing that gets you through the storm is passion. So you have to be really passionate about what you're doing, because if you're not, it's going to fall apart, you know, because there's so many days that you feel like quitting. There's so many days that you feel like stopping, that you don't feel like moving forward. So you really got to love what you do. And today in this society, everything is such instant gratification, you know, and people are wanting to get to a destination so fast that they're not laying enough bricks to build their house. And when the storm comes, everything's falling apart.
Mm.
Wow. So, you know, I feel like this, so many directors that are directors or writers or actors on Instagram, and they're cool and they're doing shit, but when they gotta go toe to toe with the real ones, they ain't ready for that battle, you know? Mm. And it's like, it's levels to this thing, you know? And you're not gonna walk, you can do some videos out of your homeboys' videos and get away with some stuff, but when you jump in there in the arena with the big dogs, with big talent, you know, mm-hmm. big talent's experienced. You know, they're gonna expect a lot. And if you don't, if you didn't go through that school, if you don't have that work ethic or those skills to lean back on, you know, it's gonna be tough. So I would just say, man, it's just is nothing's an easy road. So just, you know, do something you're passionate about and work really hard and you'll get there.
Dope.
You guys, one time for Jesse Terrero. Come on. Yeah. That was much fun. Thank you for being a guest on our show. And how can people follow you on social media? Can you drop your handles real quick?
Yeah, just at Jesse Terrero, JessyTerrero. It's my Instagram. It's what I really deal with the most. So that's where you can find me, at cinemagiants.com. That's where we post all our stuff. So thank you very much. I'm excited. I appreciate you having me.